Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, week almost over, April 19th, 2018, 18 minutes past the hour, and it's still cold, but from what I hear, the warm-up will start tomorrow, and it will take us into the 70-degree weather we should be having in April by next Monday and Tuesday. And Sunday doesn't look bad at all, 60 degrees. No rain that I can foresee in the future, but I'm no meteorologist, so we'll take what we get in the month of April. Now today, this hour, a very important program, because the most important thing in our life, quite simply put, is our health. And it's an interesting time, in my opinion. We have long had diseases in this world. We've had cancer, we have Alzheimer's, we have strokes, we have heart attacks, and many more diseases that doctors are studying and have studied and trying to wrap their minds around and creating treatments for. But it occurred to me not very long ago that the generation that is being born now really is the first generation that will never have lived in a world where there wasn't internet readily available, where cell phones weren't readily available, where text messaging was not readily available, where YouTube is not readily available, where all these things that are happening, Facebook, so quickly are just simply a part of their lives. And what will those people, what will be going on when they are 60, 70, 80, 90 years old? Will this have an effect on their health in any way? We have to remember, back in the days of smoking and drinking, in the early days before a generation passed, there wasn't a whole lot of talk about the ill effects of these products. Not until the 70s and 80s did the Surgeon General start to come out against smoking, because people noticed a big correlation between lung cancer and smoking. So what we're going to try to look into the future today and see what effect this will have with one of my favorite guests. It has been too long since he's been on. I believe it was right around the start of the year. So 4 months, and that's far too long to have this man on. You probably remember him best from his best-selling books and appearances on the Today Show and Good Morning America. Nobody better, one of my favorite people, Dr. Art Uihlein. Dr. Uihlein, how are you?
I've never been better, and it's wonderful to be with you, Scott.
Dr. Uihlein, what triggered this thought in my mind, last week, maybe the week before, Katie Couric was doing a special on the Learning Channel, and she pointed out that doctors now are starting to see some correlation between looking at a blue screen often and plaque building up in your brain. It's early. This generation is new. Could this have ill effects?
Well, the answer is, could it? Yes. But is it the blue screen that's causing the plaques? That's where medicine and science get so interesting. It could be, but it could also be the fact that people who spend massive amounts of time looking at a blue screen are under stress, are not sleeping as much as they should be, are not eating well. I'm so pleased that you used the word correlation rather than cause. So yes, there could well be a correlation between people who watch lots of blue screen times and who have an increased risk for a host of different problems, but that doesn't mean it's the blue screen that caused it. And that's where these issues of technology are so interesting. You talked about cigarettes. In the 1930s and in the early 1940s, the tobacco companies used pictures of doctors in magazines to sell their cigarettes. So one doctor would hold up a Lucky Strike and say, "It's easier on my throat." Literally, physicians were in the magazine ads. We had no idea what smoking would do to us 30, 40, 50 years later. And by the same token, we have no idea what all this technology, especially in young children, is going to do to their brains, to their behavior, and to their health 20, 30, 40 years from now. And we have some reasons for concern, by the way, Scott, because there are some studies being done now which suggest that some of the effects may be very detrimental to their health.
I want to get to that in a second, but I'm a bit of a people watcher, and something you just said hit me right in the center of my brain. If I see somebody, and certainly by no means, I'm not saying this is an old age, but if I see somebody in their mid-30s, now these people have lived without technology being a major part of their life. And even though they use it, and they're still considered savvy, younger people, they will put down the cell phone. Some of them even still have landlines. They watch CNN on television, and they go out and do things. Then I look at a 10-year-old, same device, head never comes up, never lived in a world without it.
Right. Well, the one thing I would remind you is that everything in life is a bell-shaped curve, and that curve moves and changes with time. So, for example, I can tell you about the dinner we went to with a group of friends a week ago, all in their 60s and 70s, and four of the people were continually interrupting dinner to check their cell phones. They just could not leave them alone. And I can point to my 16-year-old grandson, who has a cell phone and never answers it, never looks at it, won't return my text, and I finally discovered why. He leaves it at home. He says, "Frankly, Papa, it's a distraction, it's a disturbance, and the things that come in on my cell phone are never important except your messages." So we must be very, very cautious about trying to lump all technology into one basket, all people into one basket. When you asked me to talk about this subject, I realized how little I knew about it. And so I went scrambling quickly to the research papers. And for those who are listening, it's important for me to point out, I know very little about anything. But when Scott calls and says, "Would you talk about this subject?" I study up a little. And it's really easy in medicine because I've spent my life in medicine. But this task, getting ready for today, was very difficult, very difficult. And I am not well prepared except to say that I am awestruck by the complexity of this subject, by the unanswered questions, and by concerns, serious concerns that I have for the young children today who are literally addicted. And when I say literally, I mean in the scientific sense. Their addiction centers and their brains light up when the phone lights up. I am worried about what's going to happen to them 20 or 30 years ago. And I do want to point out one thing. This addiction is not accidental. The phones and the software on the phones has been scientifically designed to be addicting. One of the leading companies, one of the leading app developers in the United States, in the world, is based right here in Venice, California, near where I live. And the name of that company is Dopamine Labs.
Wow.
Dopamine Labs. That is the chemical associated with addiction, associated with thrill-seeking, with excitement. And their job was to design apps that would make it impossible for you and me and our children to put their phones down.
Isn't that interesting?
It's scary.
Oh, my goodness. What are the... that's right up there on concerns. What are some of the other concerns? Are they physical?
Well, the one that worries me the most is actually physical. And it has to do... will you forgive me if I do a little bit of brain science?
Go right ahead.
All right. We start... A little baby starts out with about a billion neurons in the brain, nerve cells. And they're not connected. They have the ability to connect with each other. And with life's experiences, what happens is we watch mommy and daddy, we watch the world around us, and we start making associations. And so one neuron in this part of the brain says, hey, I just saw mommy smile. And the association begins to build up in the brain. Or I saw mommy lift this, and it caused that to happen. And what happens is that neural pathways are laid down so that the next time you see mommy lift something, a cup, you know that she's probably going to put it to her mouth. The connection is made. You don't have to keep learning and learning and relearning it. Well, what the scientists are beginning to see now is that these young children who are spending hours a day with technology, their brains are being wired differently. And those connections will last for a lifetime. So they are learning differently. They are not learning from social experience. And we don't know what this is going to do 30 years from now, but we should be seriously concerned. And if I were a parent, I can tell you that I would significantly restrict my child's use of all technology. I would limit television severely. I would not allow a child under the age of 16 to have a cell phone. This sounds pretty harsh, but it's interesting because my children have done it with their kids, and it's worked out pretty well.
You know, just in general, something that stunned me about a year ago, drunk driving in my lifetime has always been an issue, and there were groups created, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And it's my understanding that in the last 5 years, that the statistics for people who are causing wrecks has went up. Text messaging has passed drunk driving.
Well, the studies show that someone who is texting on a telephone is actually as distracted and driving as poorly as someone who has reached the legal limit for alcohol. But one of the things we need to recognize, by the way, is that it's not all bad. I mean, technology is so totally pervasive in our life and really brings some benefits with it. So, when I'm driving in my car and my GPS sends a message by Bluetooth to my hearing aids that I should turn right at the next corner or prepare to turn right, that actually helps me. That reduces, I think, my likelihood of an accident. Technology saves us time. It gets us places. It answers questions. And in the field of medicine, they're developing some remarkable sensing devices. They've got a device right now that you can put in an older person. They wear it in their clothing, and it sends a signal if the person suddenly, rapidly becomes horizontal instead of vertical, meaning like a 90-year-old person who has fallen and is on the floor. And literally in a few years, people are going to wear these clothes, and so you'll be able to call and say, Mrs. Jones, are you okay? And she would say, I fell, but I'm up again. I'm okay. Or, no, I'm not okay. Please send someone to help me. So there are miraculous, wonderful applications for this technology. One of the articles I read, the researchers made a brilliant analogy between technology and food. And I'll read a line from it. In the same way, there is no single effect of eating food. There is also no single effect of watching television or playing video games. So you can eat too much food. You can gorge yourself all your life. You can eat bad foods, and it'll kill you if you do it long enough. Or you can eat small portions and choose the healthiest foods, and it will literally increase your lifespan. It will increase your cognitive ability. It'll prevent Alzheimer's disease. So it depends on what you choose, how you choose to use technology. It depends on how much of it you use. Put a child in front of a TV set for 4 hours a day, you know the outcomes are going to be different than if a child watches 15 minutes. Let a child watch some of the violent crap that's on television today, and we know scientifically, the outcome will be different than for the child that watches Sesame Street.
I remember a time when people used to say, guardians of children, they would say, don't sit in front of that television. It's going to ruin your eyes.
Yes, my mother used to say that.
Was it?
It won't ruin your eyes, but it may really ruin your brain and your thinking ability, and it'll interfere with your social interactions. And it's just fascinating how these issues evolve. If you ask me, okay, so what's your advice with respect to technology, it would be probably the same thing I've been saying for 3-4 years about every other thing you ask me about, and that is moderation, thoughtfulness, mindfulness. You know, I actually sit down. I have started leaving my phone at home now when we go out socially. I used to carry my phone everywhere because someone might call me. Someone might need me. And what I realized, Scott, was that I was not carrying my phone because someone might need me. I was carrying my phone because I needed to feel that someone might need me. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I have become much more mindful about my phone. Do I need my phone? Yeah, it's got a GPS, and I'm going to an area in Pasadena. I don't know. I'll take my phone. Do I need my phone if I'm meeting a friend over at Goldie's restaurant? No, thank you. I'm going to leave it at home. What's the worst thing that can happen? Someone who needs me will have to wait another 30, 40 minutes, and I don't need to feel needed as much when I've become mindful about my use of technology.
Those of us who predate technology, we had to communicate. When I was in school, you had to write research papers. One of the classes was still learning how to write a letter. You could not email your teacher. You certainly didn't have their home phone number. So what has this done to people who will never live in a world where that exists? ADD, conversation skills, the ability. Are 100 years from now, are we going to be reading our grandparents' emails?
It's a good question. And the thing we need to recognize is we have no idea what this is going to do to us 100 years from now. My concern about some of the issues you raised is that the way technology is used today, it trivializes relationships. Someone has pointed out that the most important message on Twitter gets exactly the same amount of attention and the same number of letters as the worst drivel. I'm so tired of getting pictures of cats. I have stopped using Instagram. I used to do it because my grandchildren used it to communicate with me. But I am just tired of seeing cats and looking at restaurant menus. Don't my friends have anything better to do than think I care about their menu? So I worry that we are degrading intellectual activities. We are diminishing our social connections. And yes, Scott, we're losing the ability to communicate clearly, to be creative, to be thoughtful. I take great joy in writing something well. I won't send an email until I've gone through four drafts of it. Now, my grandkids laugh at that, but that's I grew up with a different set of standards, if you will, for communications.
And I do not want to come off as faulting schools, but one thing that has kind of shocked me is how schools are really implementing this as, I don't think they write research papers anymore. I think you do have your teacher's email. I think that sports messages are sent out by text. There really is no watchful eye on it. Nobody is saying, don't do that. You know, most schools block Facebook, but now it's okay to have a telephone in the classroom.
I'm ambivalent about it because when my grandkids ask me, they range from 23 to 4, and the 23-year-old doesn't ask me anything, and the 20-year-old tells me. but the 4-year-old and the 7-year-old are still very quizzical, and then if they ask me a question, I will try to reach for a book. We use books, and they love to read. As a result, but from time to time, I'll say we don't have that answer. Let's go to the internet together and see if we can find the answer. Them and my kids really have taught them to use technology to serve a meaningful purpose, not as part of who you are, not to just waste time and to distract yourself, but as a valuable tool. And I find it to be an extraordinarily valuable tool in the hands when you're working with a child who's curious and keeps asking questions. It's a wonderful, wonderful tool.
It is, and it made me think. I remember when you had a family member, usually who would have a medical book, and if they had symptoms, they might pull out that medical book and try to cross-reference the symptoms with what they had, but they would still go to a doctor. Now people go first, if they feel something, I think before they dial 911, they go to the, as long as they're conscious, they go to the internet and look this up, and I don't know that they're always getting the best information.
Well, we know they're not always getting the best information. The good news about the internet is that if you know how to use it, and you can critically judge the sources, then it's a very rich source of useful information. The problem is that it is jammed with what I refer to, I'll use a medical term, crap. I just got in a recent debate with actually a physician who's trying to sell the concept of changing telomeres. You can change your telomeres, which are the end caps on chromosomes, and extend your life by buying my supplement. All right? And I said, what's the science behind it? Oh, he said, there are hundreds of articles on the internet. So I sat down with him and a few other people, and I said, let's look at those articles. We found 100 articles. We literally counted to 100. We found 100 articles. 98 of them were published by the manufacturers. They're fake articles. Talk about fake news. That's fake news. They were all written by people who were selling a supplement. The two that were not, we found on PubMed, which is the National Institute of Health's electronic library, and both of them basically said there was absolutely no science to show that these supplements had any effect. There was a theoretical basis why one might be able to believe that they could have an effect, but nowhere have the effect been proven. Yet these people are selling stuff based on articles on the internet. One needs to be very skeptical and very, very thoughtful and cautious when using the internet for medical information.
Something that interests me greatly is if you have any kind of eye disease, certainly glaucoma. If you're a diabetic, that affects the eyes. Those screens are not very big. Is there eye strain when you're constantly trying to read these tiny little words?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I am not completely up to date on that. But the last time I discussed this with an ophthalmologist, which was 2 or 3 years ago, was that was all nonsense. That if you had your vision correct, you had good vision, or you had proper correction on your lenses, that you could read. Now, if you were reading under tension, if you are squinting to see things, then what will happen is you may get muscular fatigue around the eyes, but you certainly won't damage the eyes themselves.
Is there anything to holding that device up to the side of your head for long periods of time?
Well, you know, we went through the cancer scare. I don't know if you remember, but 5-10 years ago, they were saying that using a cell phone next to your ear would cause brain cancer. That has since been disproven, although a day or two ago, I saw a flash bulletin come onto my screen. Yes, I do use the internet a lot. I am at my computer. Boom, it came on, and new study shows that cell phones cause cancer. Now, the signal was, up in the upper left-hand corner, it said, sponsored content. Okay? So, there are people who spend their days and nights and weekends paid well to design these crazy headlines that will make you read that phony story. But no, at this point, there is no evidence to suggest that. It's fascinating because one of the questions I have, I am holding my phone at quite a distance away from me, and I am hearing you not from the speaker on my phone, but through a Bluetooth signal that is sent to my hearing aids. I'm profoundly deaf, but these hearing aids make it possible to hear you. So I have actually wondered, and I spent some time doing research, which is, you know, can Bluetooth kill you? Doesn't look like it. I think I'm safe.
Well, that, good to hear. It reminds me, I have sat with in groups with elderly people and their family, and the elderly person seems to have something wrong with them, and the first thing that happens is the people, well, let me look that up. Now, these aren't doctors. Our first reaction isn't to call the hospital anymore, and in things like stroke, time is of the essence.
Yes, yes. It's interesting because I think, if I may share with your audience, I sent you a message last night saying, can I get out of this interview? I think I need to be with a friend, a 90-year-old friend who flew into town and called from the airport and had some symptoms of stroke, and he wanted to take an Uber to my house and you know, have me look at him. And I said, you're going straight to the hospital. You're going to the ER because we don't waste seconds on it. Turns out he had a middle ear problem. He was dizzy. They did some tests, and he's fine. So here I am today, and there he is. But this notion that all of the answers to everything are on the internet is dangerous. There is one good effect, though. Going to the doctor too often can be dangerous for your health. You know, we've got people now going to the doctor saying, "I saw this ad on television for this drug. What do you think about it?" They're advertising drugs like crazy, and what just fascinates me is that people will watch a commercial that says this drug will relieve your muscle pain, and they will listen for 20 seconds while it says, by the way, it can also give you diarrhea, gastritis, perforated intestine, brain disease, Alzheimer's disease, and cause death. And they ignore that. The solution to this, by the way, this word gets so overused, it's mindfulness. I call it thoughtfulness. Think about things. Just give it a little thought. The overwhelming majority of people have the intellectual capacity, the experience, and the knowledge to filter the chaff, to get rid of it, to ignore it, to recognize it for what it is. But we don't take the time to think about it. Just trust yourself enough to think about what's crazy and what's not, what's fake, what's not.
When we come back to the idea of the dopamine release in your head, yes. I think it was Newsweek 3 years ago made headlines when they ran the cover, a baby born today could live to be 150 years old. And I think, okay, well, that's good, but what will their life have been? The things that used to give us dopamine releases were contact with other people, were fun outings, were winning at sporting events, were things we like to do that we had to get off the couch to do.
Yes.
So what are these 150-year-old people... What is it just going to be? I still have to wait on how many likes I get on my picture of my cat?
Well, it's interesting because what you have just kind of led me into is what's called the displacement effect of technology. Sometimes, you know, we worry about, well, is the blue screen hurting you? I worry as much about the fact that blue screen is keeping you from getting out and walking. It is keeping you from enjoying life. I have a standing desk, by the way. I am standing in front of my desk and computer. It goes up and down, so if I really want to read, I'll set the desk down and sit in my chair. My wife and I travel a lot, and we love airports. We hate the security, but we love airports, and we are always astonished by the huge number of people who walk through airports and see nothing. They are looking at their screens, literally walking through the entire terminal. And we walk into airports and we see the world before our eyes. We marvel at the mixture of people. We marvel at the commercial businesses and how they succeed. We enjoy watching parents and children. There's a rich, beautiful world out there. I think I've told you, it's springtime here in California. It's going to be 80 degrees this weekend. And I go out and marvel at the new leaves on my tree. My plum tree is springing leaves late, and every day I stand in front of that tree and I marvel at the magnificence of nature. But if you're looking at your cell phone, you can't see it. You'll see a cat or a restaurant menu.
Well, that is it. Our moments is something interesting. There was an 80th birthday party for somebody in my family this past week. And when it was time to sing happy birthday and the cake was out there, people were singing, but everybody had their cell phone out. And I wonder, do you do that for, I want to preserve this moment forever? Or do you do that because you want to show people that you had such a good time?
We all do it for different reasons. And that's where I come back to this mindfulness, thoughtfulness issue. I think it's really important when you take a picture like that to ask why you're doing it. If you're doing it because you want to share the joy with someone who couldn't be there, I don't have a problem with that. If you're doing it because you want to recapture the moment, I'm kind of in the middle on that, because I recapture moments best, the feeling of the moment in my brain. But if you're doing it to tell someone, hey, look at me, remember me, I need your attention, I want you, your attention focused on me, that's why I'm sending you this picture, then you've got a real problem.
I wonder, I'm on Facebook. It's a great tool to tell somebody who's going to be on your program today. But when I scroll through there and I see, I'm mad because of this. This happened today. The people who take pictures of themselves. I did a test run with that. I've never, in the 10 years of Facebook, I have never changed my profile picture. And then last summer I thought, you know, I'm going to take pictures of myself for about 2 weeks here and see what that elicits. Because I didn't understand why people do it. And I still don't, because it didn't do anything for me, so I stopped.
I think that's a good sign of mental health in your case.
I don't get it. Everybody's in the bathroom looking at the mirror, taking a picture.
It's a bell-shaped curve. My concern is that the curve is being altered by the folks who are paid to make these apps compulsive, obsessive, to addict you to them. I think it's a very dangerous trap to fall into. It's interesting because I've watched my older grandchildren go through the process where for 6 months or a year they were all kind of doing that, and now they've stopped. I think that's a sign of mental health. It's a sign of thoughtfulness.
I think it's interesting because when we go back to that dopamine release, boy, is this just plain old-fashioned low self-esteem?
I don't know. Because people are usually not critical. I do notice that. There's still a little politeness out there in the world. Nobody usually says you look terrible.
What's interesting, again, I love sitting in a restaurant with a cup of coffee, watching people with their cell phones. And what's fascinating is that you can see some people who will check their cell phone. It hasn't lit up. It hasn't buzzed. It hasn't dinged. But they're checking because they need to be needed. You can actually see the look of disappointment on their face when they haven't gotten a message. I think if people who are wondering, am I using my cell phone too much, would ask themselves that question more and spend a little bit more time observing other people who have been dulled down, diminished by their cell phones, I think more and more people would put their cell phones away.
Something that fascinates me is, certainly in the last 20 years, I have seen the biggest push in mental health. Usually, now in a good-sized community, you will have a counseling center that you can go to if you don't have money and get some form of help. Now, that's good, and living in the moment, that's also been a push, that we were so busy, we were there, but did we enjoy it? Did we take time to enjoy it? Cell phones, to me, and computers, whatever they are, whatever device you have, seems to be walking that backwards. Because even if you're taking the picture to say, okay, I have a picture with Dad at the birthday party, and I'm going to keep this forever, okay, that's fine. But were you there for it? Or were you too busy trying to line up the best picture? And what does that do to your mental health?
Boy, you are asking a great question. I'm not sure that it jeopardizes your mental health, but I can tell you it cheats you out of the true highs of life. You are cheating yourself by not being there 100%.
And maybe this is the biggest question of all. I used to think that the 20th century, I looked at it and I thought, the prevalence of every home having an automobile, the prevalence of every home having a radio, every home having a television, you could see the Berlin Wall coming down in your living room, cable television, the internet, computer in every home. That pretty well happened in the 20th century. Cell phones.
Right.
But those, to me, were positives. Now, they had negative aspects. With the car came the car crash. But the good far outweighed the bad. We did not have to adjust our life for those things, our structured life. I'm not sure that internet, the same can be said, and I'm also not sure where it will end.
Well, I can tell you one sign of where it's taking us, and that is nearly 70% of Americans are overweight, half of them at levels high enough to be clinically diagnosed as obese. Their health is in jeopardy, their lifespans are decreased. So again, it is a side effect of the technology. It's a side effect of the car. People walk, no longer walk. All that time you spend sitting at your computer, you are spending after 40 minutes in an unhealthy metabolic state. That's why I stand in front of my computer. So there are subtle effects that are not good. Should we throw out the technology? No, just like we shouldn't stop eating. But we need to use technology more intelligently, more thoughtfully, so it serves us instead of cheating us.
The bit of information you started this conversation with about there are people who are designing these programs to make the dopamine in your brain go off to create an addiction to that device. Why isn't that the lead news story anywhere?
Well, it actually was. It was on 60 Minutes. They just replayed it again recently. 60 Minutes did an hour-long show on the addictive nature of these devices. They interviewed the owner, the fellow who created Dopamine Labs, and he actually said he regretted many of the things that he had done. But his specific assignment was to make it impossible to leave that phone alone, to keep your hands off that phone. And they did it so brilliantly that they've been fantastically successful business-wise. And there are many companies like them now.
Isn't that interesting, though, that in 1994, 30 million people were watching 60 Minutes every week, but now only about 6 million watch it, and the only derivation I can see in those years is YouTube and Netflix, and I don't see those organizations running shows like that.
Well, those organizations are not in the business of running shows like that. They're in the business of selling advertising to eyeballs. That's their business.
So,
and the more they can get you to click, the more money they make off you.
So in a nutshell here, as we bring this this is an interesting conversation to have. In the long term, obviously moderation, just like with anything, is the key.
Yes.
But is there any worry? What do we need to know to make that happen? Do we need to know that that bell, that whistle, that red light that lets us know we have a message, so on, that is designed to addict us?
I think it's important to know that. That's why I can now leave my phone home, because I recognized number one, what they had done, what they had designed to hook me to my phone. And the other thing is I recognized that I was using that to feed some unhealthy psychological needs, you know, to feel needed, to feel important, to feel contacted. To feel a part of it. And once I saw those two things, I said the phone stays home now. And it stays home about half the time. When it's with me, I have turned off the signals. Actually, my son-in-law 2 days ago did something wonderful for my wife and for me. I didn't even realize you could do this. It is now impossible to call me when I am driving, because my cell phone, I didn't realize you could do this, and my iPhone has the ability to recognize when it's in motion in a car, and it will automatically reject any phone call that comes in at that time. It sends a message automatically that says, I'm driving, I'll call you when I'm settled somewhere.
So in closing, worst case scenario, at this point, the first generation to never be without this, there really is no proof that it will lead to physical issues, mental issues, nothing outside of just the plain fact that I can't detach myself from the phone.
Oh, no, I didn't say that. There is actually gathering evidence that it is changing the brains of young children who are spending long times using this technology. And we do not know and will not know for 20 or 30 years what those brain changes are doing. I'm 81 years old. I'm not going to worry about it for myself. But I do worry for the 4-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 12-year-olds of the world. What will they discover 20 to 30 years from now when their brains are literally rewired to function only in a wired world?
Is that, in your case, in your opinion, would that be more toward the disease side or the thought process side?
That would be more toward the thought process side.
It's fascinating. I think this program will be around 70 years from now, and hopefully somebody will listen to it and say, that's what they were talking about way back when. Dr. Art Uihlein, it's always my pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Scott.
Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWE.